If you're a Twitter user and you're seeing unexpected things in your feed, you're not alone. With us this morning to talk about that, as well as a few other things happening across the social media landscape, is digital strategist Scott Kleinberg. Good morning, Scott. Unexpected things in our Twitter feed. Why would this happen?
Good morning, Bob. Well, in this case, it's happening because Twitter is expanding a feature that it calls recommendations. And in Twitter's words, they want to ensure everyone on Twitter sees the best content on the platform. So it's expanding recommendations to all users. And that also includes those who may not have seen these recommendations in the past.
So it's the best content according to Twitter anyway, right?
Yeah, that's right. And Bob, I'm not going to mince words here. I am not a fan of recommendation engines. I completely understand that algorithms and computers can do amazing things, but when it comes to what I like on social media, I consider it to be a very personal choice. Twitter's thinking is that it's so huge that there's no way in the world that we could possibly see everything, and I definitely don't dispute that. But that's not to say that you won't have a different experience and you might actually find this type of assistance helpful, but the reason why you're seeing all this stuff from accounts you don't follow is basically because Twitter thinks you should.
And Twitter hasn't had the best track record lately in terms of the content that's on its platform, have they?
Oh, exactly. And yeah, people have really not been happy with what they've been seeing on Twitter as of late. I mean, hate speech is up, banned accounts are returning. In my humble opinion, this is a very strange time to push recommendations.
But there are things we can do to control these recommendations, aren't there?
Oh, absolutely. And recommendations, to be clear, they're based on several factors, including topics you follow, tweets you've engaged with, tweets people in your network have reacted to. And Twitter is also testing different designs. So, for example, you might see an X next to a tweet, and when you click the X, you're providing feedback that you're not interested in that tweet. You may also see what looks like three little diamonds. And when you click on those, you have a choice between seeing the recommendations that we're talking about and then going back to tweets only from the accounts that you follow. So it's definitely manageable, but if you're not prepared for it, it's definitely a little bit of extra work to get your feed to be the way you want it to be.
Hmm. It sounds like this is the social media world we live in now, where we're going to get a little help from technology.
Yeah, that's a really good way to look at it, Bob. And, you know, I do want to point out that Twitter isn't the only platform testing recommendations and turning to technology. So you see this kind of stuff now on Instagram and TikTok. And in some cases, it works better in some situations than in others. It's a lot of trial and error, that's for sure. And also a good reminder that social media experiences are not absolute, even if they're predictable. The most recent reports from Facebook show that fewer people are interacting with political content, and that's something we haven't seen in quite a while. I think that says a lot about people's taste changing, or at the very least, they're evolving. And I think what Twitter is trying to do, they want to find out what people really want to see. But at the end of the day, the most important thing a social media platform can do is make sure that we as the user still have the ability to determine what we find interesting, because algorithms can only go so far and do so much.
Getting back to Twitter's new different designs, how are people supposed to know what the X is for or what the three diamonds means? Do they just assume we're gonna click in and learn on our own?
Yes and yes, and that's actually a fascinating question. I honestly believe that it's somewhat psychological. I honestly believe that they don't necessarily tell you what these things are because they want to see how you react to them. So if all of a sudden you're used to being on Twitter and you see X's near your tweets, you're going to want to click on it to find out what it is. The same for the three diamonds. And then they can find out from that whether or not that type of relationship is working versus sending you a pop-up that says, you may see an X on your tweet, which does this. They want to see how you react to these new changes.
Talking about what's new and what's happening in the world of social media, Scott, you mentioned something new from LinkedIn. What's that all about?
Yeah, yeah. And Bob, while this might seem like a small thing, it actually has the potential to be very useful. LinkedIn has started to roll out what they call post scheduling, which means that you might be able to set up LinkedIn posts to go live at a time of your choosing up to 90 days in advance. And this is a feature that LinkedIn has been testing for a while now.
And don't you usually need a third-party program to schedule content on social media?
Oftentimes, yes. But if you are a social media platform, if you're LinkedIn, you really want to provide users with all the tools they need for the best experience possible right within the app. That's the key. The third-party tools that you mentioned, they're extremely useful to people who manage social media professionally because in those cases, you can schedule content on multiple platforms and do it all in one place. But everybody has different needs, and the other benefit of doing it right within the app is you don't have to rely on another app to make that process work. But a few quick things to note about this. The feature is starting to roll out, so you may not see it right away. It may take some time. And for starters, this is just for personal LinkedIn accounts, not for company pages. It's not for groups, although LinkedIn says that that's going to be coming soon. So depending on how you use LinkedIn, this may not be as useful as you're hoping for, but it definitely has a lot of potential.
Speaking of scheduling, it's a good habit to schedule content on social media, right? We've talked about that before.
It can be a very good habit, especially when you use social media for business, because it's very easy to get bogged down in other things. And before you know it, your social media takes a back seat. When you schedule something, you at least know there's content going live on your feed.
Now, I know you're going to say that it's not always a very good habit, right?
You know me very well, and we've talked about this as well. Where it gets dicey is when you rely on those automated tools too much. And one area where brands get into a lot of trouble on social media, and Bob, it's been like this for as long as I can remember, is when you schedule something a while back and it ends up going live at an inopportune time, say in the case of breaking news. Here's an example. This wasn't a bad one, but here's an example. I saw a post over the weekend. It was obviously scheduled well in advance, and it was talking about the pandemonium around the World Cup in the U.S. The problem is the story went live about 2 hours after the U.S. lost its match. So it comes across as pretty tone deaf. The person who scheduled it, I can see it now, obviously thought, well, there's a game this weekend. We should have content about the World Cup on our social media. And yes, but they thought it through halfway. They didn't take into account how it's going to look if the team they're focusing on loses. So that's why you got to be aware of what you're scheduling, and you don't want to leave everything to those automated scheduling tools. It's just like the self-driving car, Bob. We're not at the point yet where we don't need the driver.
No, we're not. Let's get to a couple of tidbits here before I let you go, Scott. First, sure. What's this Facebook removing news story all about?
This, honestly, Bob, this is probably the biggest story that's not getting a lot of attention right now. So it's called, they want to pass something in Congress called the Journalism Competition and Preservation Act. And in a nutshell, it's very long, but in a nutshell, it would allow news organizations to jointly negotiate fair terms for access to content by Google, Facebook, and other dominant platforms. Basically, it would give a journalism company a seat at the table to say, we want to negotiate how much you're going to pay us for using our content.
And so as far as what that means for the casual user like me, when, if any time in the future, am I going to see something drastically different with my news feed?
Well, according to what Meta, which is the parent company of Facebook, is saying, they have no interest in this bill. They think the bill is ill-conceived. They actually think that they are providing an opposite service, that they're providing more traffic and more subscriptions to companies. So Facebook is threatening to pull all news from news feeds, which would be what you're saying, which would change your feed drastically. You wouldn't see any story. But one thing to keep in mind about all of this that ties it all together is something very similar happened in Australia. Facebook said that they were going to pull news, and then Facebook ended up negotiating with journalism companies, and now everything is back to normal, but there's negotiation for the use of the content. So if the same thing happened that happened in Australia happens here, it's a forcible way to basically get Meta to the table to bargain for rights to that content.
Interesting. Thanks for explaining that. Okay, now let's open up the Genius Bar. Many people will be getting new phones for Christmas. So a couple of questions on that. First, is there anything we need to do to prepare for a new phone as far as transferring, or you will have to transfer your content? Anything you need to do in advance?
The only thing, great question, the only thing you need to do in advance is make sure that whatever phone you're using, whether it's an iPhone or an Android phone, that you're taking advantage of the automatic backup features that exist. I can tell you on an iPhone that every time you connect it at night to your to power and to Wi-Fi, it will automatically back up your settings. The reason why that matters is it comes back to exactly what you just talked about. When someone opens up their brand new phone after, you know, the holiday season, and they activate it for the first time, what that backup does is allows the old phone to kind of fade away, the service to transfer to the new phone, and everything that you saw on your old phone transfers to your new phone exactly, to where the icons are, to where the folders are, to all your content, where you don't actually have to do anything. But if you don't have that backup, you're not going to be able to get that seamless transition.
And how long does it take to get used to an iPhone with no home button?
An iPhone, you know what? That's interesting. It took me a lot less time than I thought it was going to. I thought I was going to be like pushing the screen and doing all this stuff, but actually after a while, I can't believe I ever had a home button. It is really awesome because your phones have Face ID, so you just stare at them and they open. You don't even need the button. So it's like super lazy, but super awesome at the same time.
Good. There's hope for me. Scott Kleinberg, thank you. Talk to you next week.
Take care, Bob.